OK, people are coming in. Il y a du monde qui rentre. Alors, je vais commencer. Couple of things. Je vais juste expliquer comment ça va fonctionner. I'm going to explain how this is going to work. First of all, for people in English, this is actually going to serve as a podcast episode. And this week, our podcast is supposed to be in French. So I'm going to talk a little bit in French, and then I'm going to take your questions after that in English or French. But first, it's just going to be a little introductory kind of talk, kind of podcast style. I have a few things I'd like to say. Alors, façon que ça va fonctionner, c'est que moi, je vais juste parler un peu sur ce qui s'est passé avec le Canadien depuis notre dernier podcast. Puis il y en a quand même un événement assez important qui s'est passé. Alors, je vais parler de ça pendant un petit bout et une couple de choses qui se passent avec l'équipe. Puis après que j'ai fini, quand j'ai terminé, je vais prendre les questions. En anglais ou en français. Alors, juste pour commencer, évidemment, on a eu le décès de Guy Lafleur vendredi, un événement qui a attristé tellement de monde, puis c'est tellement, tu sais, c'est un bon reminder pour moi, un bon rappel, je veux dire. Tu sais, à quel point, quelle place cette équipe-là, le Canadien, quelle place il prend dans la société, au Québec, avec le monde, juste voir à quel point les hommages pour Guy Lafleur, du monde qu'il n'a pas vraiment vu jouer, qui l'ont seulement vu jouer peut-être ici à New York, je suis à New York aujourd'hui, ici à New York ou à Québec, mais pas vraiment dans les années 70. J'en ai rencontré tellement de monde qui, comme moi, je suis né en 76, qui ont été nés, qui sont nés pendant ce temps-là, mais qui sont quand même. Il y a ce lien avec Guy Lafleur qui est ce qu'il représente. Tu sais, c'est ça qui est important. Tu sais, j'ai eu le privilège de couvrir. C'est le privilège, c'est peut-être pas le bon mot, mais j'ai couvert le décès de Maurice Richard en 2000, le décès de Charles Béliveau en 2014. Puis, j'ai hâte de voir comment ça va être dimanche et lundi quand Guy est en chapelle ardente au Centre Bell, ce qui était exactement la même chose qui est arrivé en 2014 et en 2000. Puis, il y a une fameuse photo de Guy Lafleur qui visite Jean Béliveau au Centre Bell. Est à genoux, en train de rendre hommage à son héros, à son mentor, en fait, la personne qui lui a passé le flambeau d'une légende à une autre au début des années 70. Mais tu sais, c'est tellement approprié que c'est le même pattern, c'est la même routine que le Canadien va avoir pour honorer la vie de Guy Lafleur qu'ils ont fait pour Jean Béliveau et pour Maurice Richard, parce que il est vraiment dans ce moule-là. Tu sais, c'est quelqu'un qui était non seulement un excellent joueur de hockey pour le Canadien, mais tu sais, il était un représentant de peuple. Tu sais, puis je trouve que dans le cas des trois hommes, c'était un peu ça leur rôle, en plus de joueur de hockey, qui peut être lourd des fois. Et je pense que chacun des trois l'a fait de leur façon, l'a fait d'une façon différente, mais le résultat était le même. Tu sais, c'est une fierté d'un peuple, un représentant d'un peuple sûr. À une échelle mondiale. Alors, j'ai hâte de voir ces funérailles qui vont avoir lieu le mardi à la même église où ils ont eu lieu les funérailles nationales, même église où les funérailles de M. Béliveau a eu lieu, où les funérailles de M. Richard ont eu lieu. Alors, c'est vraiment des grands moments qui nous attendent la semaine prochaine, ce qu'on a déjà vécu. Depuis vendredi, juste les hommages partout. Alors, je souhaite mes sincères condoléances aux familles Lafleur, mais c'est vraiment, je pense que sa famille, c'est vraiment plus grand que juste la famille Guy Lafleur. C'est vraiment quelque chose qui est plus grand que l'hockey, qui est plus grand que le sport. C'est un personnage historique du Québec. Tu sais, c'est vraiment quelqu'un qui a marqué l'histoire de notre province. Et non seulement dans notre province, mais dans tout le Canada. Il était le meilleur joueur au monde pendant 5-6 ans. Puis c'était pas vraiment. Il n'y a pas trop de débat là-dessus. Alors, c'est quand même, il y a ça, mais ce qu'il représentait pour la population, je pense, c'était très, très intéressant et très. C'est pour ça que j'ai hâte de voir ce que les Canadiens vont faire, parce que dans le fond, ils ont mentionné que tout ce qui va être fait va être à l'image de Guy Lafleur, humble, mais accessible au monde. Et c'est ça que Guy Lafleur était. Je parlais avec Geneviève Paquette, qui est vice-présidente du Canadien. En termes d'engagement communautaire et en termes du, tu sais, elle gère la Fondation du Canadien pour l'enfance. Et alors, elle a travaillé beaucoup avec Guy Lafleur. C'est quelqu'un qui était tout le temps présent. Chaque fois que le Canadien lui demandait de faire quelque chose, il était là. À chaque fois que le Canadien recevait des demandes des organisations, que Guy Lafleur soit là, il était là. Quand il était capable de le faire, s'il n'y avait pas un autre événement prévu, jusqu'à temps que son santé lui permettait pas de le faire, il était tout le temps là. Et il aimait ça le faire, c'est ça que j'aime bien. Il l'a fait parce qu'il adorait ça. Il avait besoin de ce contact-là avec son public. Il avait besoin, il comprenait à quel point, la façon que Geneviève l'a dit, il comprenait la portée de sa présence. Et je trouvais ça très intéressant. Tu sais, c'est une chose d'être un grand personnage, c'est une chose d'être quelqu'un que tout le monde adore, mais c'est quelque chose d'autre de comprendre qu'est-ce que ça veut dire ça et comment l'utiliser et comment c'est un peu ta responsabilité d'utiliser cette portée-là pour aider des gens, aider du monde, pour être dans la communauté. Alors c'est une perte qui est très triste. Mais je trouve qu'à date, ce que le Canadien a fait pour l'honorer, est quand même typiquement canadien. C'est une chose que cette organisation-là fait très bien. Et j'ai hâte de voir à quel point, quel nombre de personnes va venir au Centre Bell. C'est dimanche et lundi. Si vous voulez aller le voir, tout le monde est le bienvenu. Alors, vous pourriez visiter le Centre Bell, puis voir, puis payer vos respects à Monsieur Lafleur, puis après ça, mardi, on aura ses funérailles. Une couple d'autres choses avant que je prends vos appels. A couple more things before I take your calls. Carey Price. Carey Price est ici à New York. Il était supposé voir son médecin aujourd'hui. On est mercredi. Et le Canadien joue contre les Rangers ce soir. Ma compréhension des choses, c'est qu'il y a rien de, il y a rien de grave qui veut aller juste, c'est comme un check-up. C'est comme quand toi ou moi, quand on va chez le médecin, juste pour vérifier si tout est beau. C'est ça ma compréhension des choses, c'est que c'est vraiment rien de grave. Et vu que le Canadien venait à New York anyway, il a décidé de le faire. On verra. Peut-être qu'après le match, matin Saint-Louis, où le Canadien peut nous donner un petit update sur comment ça s'est passé, mais moi, ma compréhension des choses, c'est que c'est pas, c'est rien qui devrait, tu sais, il n'y a pas de crainte nécessairement, mais en même temps, je comprends tout ça, avoir dit tout ça, mais le fait que Carey Price sent le besoin d'aller voir son médecin, c'est le chirurgien qui a travaillé sur son genou, qui a fait une chirurgie qui était quand même assez. Je ne veux pas dire banal, il n'y a pas de chirurgie banale, mais c'était quand même assez routine comme procédure en juillet. Et là, on est presque rendu à l'été encore, l'année d'après. Puis le fait qu'il sentait ce besoin-là, qu'il sentait le besoin d'avoir un break, qu'il n'était pas capable d'être sur le banc comme backup le soir où le Canadien a rendu hommage à Guy Lafleur. Dans ma tête, je dois croire que Carey Price aurait aimé ça, être sur le banc pour ce match-là en particulier. Alors ça, même si c'est juste un check-up avec le médecin, je dois avouer que ces circonstances-là, ça augure pas très bien. T'sais. Alors, on verra ce que ça donne. Le Canadien n'a même pas confirmé que Carey Price jouera pas vendredi. Alors, c'est quand même une possibilité. Mais on va voir. Mais tout ça, ça, en fait, ça démontre à quel point la saison morte qui s'en vient pour les Canadiens, la première saison morte pour Jeff Gorton et Kent Hughes, est tellement basée sur ce que Carey Price va faire ou pourrait faire, comment il jouera, s'il est capable de jouer, qu'est-ce qui, tu sais, tout part de là. Alors, sans cette information-là, ça va être très difficile de planifier quoi que ce soit. Je pense que Carey Price est au courant de ça, tu sais, que le Canadien doit savoir s'il peut s'attendre à avoir un Carey Price en santé dans le filet l'année prochaine. Carey Price lui-même doit le savoir. Et cette visite au médecin me dit que, au minimum, ils savent pas encore. Tu sais, c'est quand même un inconnu en allant vers la saison morte et c'est vraiment c'est quelque chose qui peut pas être inconnu. Tu sais, tu peux rien faire d'autre sans avoir cette information-là. Alors, en espérant que le médecin, tu sais, pour le Canadien, pour Carey Price, en espérant que le médecin a vu son jeu puis dit, ah, tout est beau, ne t'en fais pas, c'est correct, continue ce que tu fais. Mais on verra. Dernière chose avant de prendre le dépêche, my last little point before I take your calls, mais un petit scène amusant aujourd'hui au Madison Square Garden. Je voulais juste la raconter. Les Canadiens ont tenu un morning skate optionnel, facultatif. Alors, il y avait comme peut-être 2 tiers de l'équipe qui ont patiné là. Il y avait quand même pas mal de monde. Mais à la fin, les joueurs qui jouent pas ce soir, alors, toute vraisemblance, ça veut dire que Matthew Perreault, Chris Wideman et Cale Klage jouent pas. Ils ont resté sur la glace. Puis les 4 entraîneurs du Canadien, ça veut dire Luke Richardson, Alex Burrows, Trevor Letowski et Martin Saint-Louis, ont joué un jeu de 3 contre 3. Alors, les coachs avaient droit à une substitution. Mais à part ça, c'était go. Ils jouaient, Caden Primeau était dans le but. Et ils ont joué un vrai match. Et à la fin de tout ça, rappelle-toi, c'est 3 anciens joueurs, en fait 4 anciens joueurs de la Ligue nationale contre 3 joueurs actuels de la Ligue nationale. Et c'est les coachs qui ont gagné, qui ont remporté le parti avec Martin Saint-Louis qui a marqué le but gagnant à la fin. Les 4 gars ont célébré. Je pense que Martin a même chanté comme le goal song, la chanson qu'il joue à Madison Square Garden après un but des Rangers. Il l'a chanté. C'était un scène qui démontrait à quel point, premièrement, que le monde est capable de s'amuser pendant une saison comme ça. Et puis, c'est sain, c'est une bonne chose. Mais à quel point, tu sais, l'énergie de Martin Saint-Louis, là, tu le voyais sur la patinoire, sur la glace du Madison Square Garden, ils compétitionnaient. Toutes les 4 compétitionnaient. C'était pas un match easy là. Il y avait pas d'équipement sur les coachs, alors il y avait pas des mises en échec et tout, mais c'était quand même assez compétitif, assez agressif. Alors et c'est ça. Les vieux l'ont emporté sur les jeunes. Alors je trouvais ça drôle. Je vais juste le partager avec vous autres. Alors, avec ça, on va commencer à prendre des appels. OK, so with that, we're going to start taking some calls. I'm done blabbing. So, alors, comme j'ai dit, anglais ou français, English or French, either one goes. I think there's someone waiting. Bruno? Bruno, we're going to go to you.
Salut Arpin, comment ça va?
Ça va bien, Bruno, comment vas-tu?
Ça va bien, ça va bien. J'ai une petite question, puis je vais t'expliquer pourquoi j'ai cette question-là. Qu'est-ce que l'avenir réserve à Samuel Montembeault? Puis, la raison pourquoi je pose la question, c'est que j'ai eu des discussions récentes avec d'autres partisans. Puis, moi, je me demande vraiment si Montembeault a même une place de numéro 2 dans la Ligue nationale, parce que malgré le fait que l'équipe devant lui est pas nécessairement extraordinaire, puis que n'importe quel gardien, évidemment, aurait eu de la difficulté cette saison, le type de but qu'il donne de façon générale, je trouve qu'il y a beaucoup de buts faibles qui ont été donnés par Montembeault cette saison. Puis, tu sais, il y a déjà 25 ans. Je pense qu'à un moment donné, à 25 ans, on sait un peu ce qu'on a comme joueur, surtout comme gardien. Il y a des cas exceptionnels, là, des Tim Thomas qui arrivent à 32 ans puis qui sont exceptionnels, mais je veux dire, de façon générale, je me demande si Montembeault s'est même donné une chance cette saison de se trouver un poste de backup dans une autre équipe de la Ligue nationale pour la saison prochaine, en supposant qu'il ne revient pas à Montréal, évidemment.
Oui, bonne question, Bruno. À mon avis, j'ai de la misère avec l'évaluation de Samuel Montembeault parce qu'il est capable d'offrir des matchs extraordinaires. On l'a vu très souvent cette saison, avec des matchs de 50 tirs au but, puis qui donne seulement 2, 3 buts. Il donnait une chance aux Canadiens de rester dans des matchs où il n'y avait aucune affaire à rester dans des matchs. Le problème avec Samuel Montembeault, c'est que à n'importe quel moment, il peut ou connaître vraiment un mauvais match, comme il peut en coller 3, 4, 5 de suite qui sont vraiment bonnes, mais là, t'as comme une idée qu'il y en a un mauvais qui s'en vient. Tu sais, s'il y a tout le temps. Alors, ça, c'est une qualité que tu peux pas avoir dans un gardien partant. Tu sais, tous les gardiens connaissent des mauvais matchs de temps en temps, mais la fréquence avec laquelle il donnait, comme tu as mentionné, Bruno, les mauvais buts qu'il donnait, qui peut arriver comme à n'importe quel moment, c'est un peu l'opposé que le feeling que tu es supposé avoir devant un gardien de but. Ceci étant dit, alors pour répondre à ta question, ça c'est clair que c'est pas idéal pour un gardien de la Ligue nationale, mais ce que moi, la raison pour laquelle je pense qu'il s'est donné une chance de trouver un poste comme backup quelque part dans la Ligue nationale, c'est que c'est juste à quel point il s'est amélioré cette saison. Tu sais, si tu te rappelles le gardien qu'on a vu au camp d'entraînement, honnêtement, l'histoire de Samuel Montembeault est fascinante, tu sais, parce que dans le fond, il est venu pour jouer le match à Buffalo, le deuxième match de la saison qui était un back-à-back après le match à Toronto. Puis il savait que Price, tu sais, il savait pas ce qui se passait avec Price, alors ils l'ont réclamé sur les waivers. Puis je pense que c'était le lendemain, est-ce que je me trompe, mais c'est pas long après ça que Price a fait l'annonce qu'il allait au programme d'assistance de l'Association des joueurs et de la Ligue nationale, et que tout d'un coup, Montembeault est devenu un gardien quand même assez important pour le Canadien, est devenu le backup. Alors, de là, il a connu des moments, tu sais, Jake Allen se blesse, il a connu des moments où il jouait plein de matchs, c'est la première fois de sa vie qu'il le fait, et c'est pendant ce run-là que tu vois que oui, il peut te donner 2, 3 bons matchs, peut-être 4, mais il y en a tout le temps, il y en a un mauvais qui s'en vient, il me semble, souvent. Sauf que pendant ce temps-là, en travaillant avec Éric Raymond, il y a certaines qualités de son jeu qui se sont vraiment améliorées, puis il a connu des excellents matchs contre certaines équipes qui pourraient avoir besoin d'un gardien l'année prochaine. Alors, je pense que il s'est au moins donné une chance de signer un contrat avec quelqu'un. Et qui sait, on ne sait pas ce qui va se passer avec Carey Price. Alors, ça se peut que les Canadiens le ramènent encore, je ne sais pas. Mais c'est ça. Moi, j'ai de la difficulté à le voir comme partant dans la Ligue nationale un jour. Mais comme backup, c'est plausible. C'est quelque chose que. Et s'il continue cette amélioration-là, il pourrait développer sur le tard, mais tu sais. Son mouvement latéral, Samuel, tu sais, Montembeault en parlait juste l'autre jour, à quel point il trouve qu'il est meilleur là-dedans. Puis je suis d'accord, dans le fond. Il y a beaucoup de. Tu sais, l'autre soir, le but que Bergeron a marqué dans le match contre Boston, c'était sur un retour de lancer d'un arrêt qui était vraiment spectaculaire. Tu sais, c'est comme Montembeault n'avait aucune affaire à faire cet arrêt-là, mais il l'a fait. Tu sais, évidemment, il ne pouvait pas faire le retour de lancer de Bergeron. Mais je me rappelle pas, en fait, je me rappelle pas c'était qui a lancé pour le premier arrêt, mais c'est ça, il est capable de faire ça, puis il est capable d'en donner des mauvais, mais on verra. Mais je souhaite pour lui, parce qu'honnêtement, il connaît une bonne saison, puis il travaille très fort. Tous les entraînements, tu le voyais avant, après, tu sais, c'est le gars qui réalise à quel point il est rendu dans sa carrière.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Okay, we have Neil. I'm going to go to Neil. Hi, Neil.
Oh, hi. How you doing?
Good.
Good. Oh, sorry. Yeah, I kind of screwed up how things are going today.
No, well, you're on now. What's up?
I didn't hear the start of your speech or whatever, but I'm just curious. Who do you think next year on the Canadians, if you look at the roster that's going to end the year on Friday, and you're looking at the roster next year, who do you think is going to be gone off that roster, and what do you think they can get for the players that you don't think are going to be there next year? Is that it's a long one, and it's open, very open, but.
No, it's a fair question. It's a good. Yeah. I'm gonna try to tackle it. Okay, it is a tough one. Thanks, Neil. Okay, I'm gonna talk for a while now. So you know, this is gonna take me some time because, you know, the obvious one. Let's start with the obvious one, right? I mean, Jeff Petrie's situation is not exactly clear. The last time we heard from him, he was asked point blank, actually, Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette in his way, very bluntly asked him if he thinks he's going to be here next year. And he said, you know, he's with the Canadiens until they say otherwise. Now it wasn't the most, let's say passionate plea to be back. I mean, I think a trade is what he would want. It's what the organization would want. It's still the number one thing that, you know, Kent Hughes is going to try to accomplish in this offseason. He's trying to find a market for Jeff Petrie. And the way he's played over the second half of this season has made that a lot easier. Because frankly, to me, for the last like 2 weeks, maybe more, Jeff Petrie's just been playing excellent. Like he's really looking like his former self. And, now, what can you get for Jeff Petrie? I think there's market value there. I think there is some value if he can come in and be, you know, he doesn't make an ungodly amount of money to play a number four role or a second pair role on a team, on a decent team. I wonder if Detroit would have any interest in bringing him back. And you know, I think a happy Jeff Petrie is a valuable player. And I think people around the league understand how circumstances played into some of the stuff that happened to him this year. I think losing Shea Weber at the beginning of the season was big for him because he really wanted to take on more. He wanted to become a more central figure on the team. And I think in wanting that, it diminished his play. It made him worse. You know, he was trying to do too much. But I think for Jeff Petrie, I don't think they would necessarily have to retain money. I think they could get a pick, a decent pick, maybe a prospect, but I don't think you're getting a roster player back in that case. Now, as for the other people, like I'm not going to get into the Laurent Dauphins and Cale Clags. I mean, people who are just going, you know, are pretty obvious at this point. I think the real question marks are if the Canadiens will be able to find, and it's contracts that need to be moved. And Ken Hughes has been very open about this, saying that they're last in the league, but they're first on the cap friendly page. And it's true. They are. They're spending the most money in the league this year, and that needs to change. So, you know, Joel Armia, Mike Hoffman are two guys that I look at as what are the Canadiens going to be able to do with those two guys. They're both useful players in their own way. They're both imperfect in their own way. They both have multiple years left on their contract. They're both paid too much for what they've done this season. It could be argued that if Mike Hoffman had a normal season where he scores goals at a rate that he normally does, that he would be able to generate some sort of interest as a power play specialist, as a guy who's just a sniper. And I think most people in the league know Mike Hoffman for what he is, which is just, you know, I think Brett Hull was once criticized when he was with the Calgary Flames. I forget who was running the Flames at the time. It might've been Craig Button, but I forget who said it, but you know, they said all he does is score goals. And it was a criticism. it was they were talking about Brett Allen, like how he didn't have a complete game. And, in the past, that described Mike Hoffman. Like, all he does is score goals. There's nothing else. There's no other elements to his game that are all that positive. Now, you know, Marte St. Louis has been, at this point, I have to believe it's sincere because he's been so consistent in praising Hoffman and respecting his game. And he shows it in the way that he uses Hoffman. Like, he puts him out in high leverage situations. He's out there whenever they pull the goalie. 5-on-3, you know, like there's all sorts of situations that Mike Hoffman's on the ice. So what Martin St. Louis says about him off the ice manifests itself by Mike Hoffman being on the ice in those situations. And there was one situation, I mean, I was talking to a scout about him and he pointed this out, end of the game in Toronto, he's on the ice, goalie pulled, he gets the puck at the top. He's on the blue line. I think St. Louis used six forwards that time. Gets the puck, Cole Caulfield's open in the left circle. There were like 2 seconds left. So, you know, it would take like an incredible amount of presence of mind to get that puck over to Caulfield. But he could have, and he didn't. And so it was just kind of a Mike Hoffman-y moment. So I'm not sure if the Canadiens will be able to get anyone to take that contract, but they're going to try. I know this is a lame answer, but I mean, it's really... If you can get someone to take the contract, then you're not getting anything of any value back for Mike Hoffman. Same boat, kind of Joel Armia, which is ironic because Joel Armia was basically the reward for the Canadians taking on Steve Mason's contract from the Winnipeg Jets. He was the throw-in. He was the payment, and now I get the feeling that if they wanted to trade Joel Armia, they would have to do something similar where they'd have to send a sweetener with him to get someone to take that contract. So I don't have any firm answers. I can't say with any degree of assurance which of these guys are going to be back. I didn't even touch on Paul Byron. I think the Canadiens would rather keep Paul Byron, but you know, in his injury situation, the Canadiens were actually going to check today on how he's doing because there hadn't been much word of that. So he's another one whose contract exact same cap hit as Joel Armia, a fourth line guy who has qualities but recently hasn't been able to stay healthy, which is too bad for him. That's another guy that they're going to need to make some decisions on. But it's, you know, I would anticipate most of the veterans on big contracts, or all, you know, almost all of them aside from Petrie, to probably be back next year, because I just don't know how. I mean, the one thing the Canadiens have going for them in this is that they have a ton of draft picks. So if they need to tack a draft pick onto one of these guys to get a team to take them, they can do that because they have a lot of them this year. So that's going to be something to watch, but it's definitely a priority for the management group. This answer was really long without saying a whole lot, Neil, so I apologize, but I don't have the answers that you're looking for, I think. Hey, Devin, there's someone on the chat here. This is Devin. How do you see the Drouin situation playing out? Realistically, it's a business, and they just haven't had a return on investment with him. Is it time to cut ties? I think for both parties involved, it would probably be time to cut ties. I think Drouin himself would probably like a change of scenery, and you know, he only has 1 year left on his contract. So it's not as if it's not the same situation as Hoffman and Armia and Byron. It's not multiple years at a bloated number. It's only 1 year, which also leads me to believe, or I shouldn't say leads me to believe, but I would imagine the Canadians would be willing to retain money on Jonathan Drouin's contract if they were to work out a trade. More so than they would with Armia or with Hoffman or even with Petrie, just because of the multiple years that are left on those deals. And so I think, and then whatever happens with Carey Price, you know, if Carey Price wants to find somewhere else to play at some point, you know, for sure the Canadiens are going to have to retain money in that deal if that ever happens. And so that's something they would have to keep in their back pocket. So, but in Julian's case, for 1 year, probably pretty doable. So, you know, I don't think this would be a situation of cutting ties, even though I guess literally it would be. But it is something that I think both parties would probably welcome. And I do think they could find a team that could that would take a chance on Jonathan Drouin for 1 year, because no one denies his talent. And quite frankly, you know, when this team was really going badly under Dominique Ducharme and really not being the least bit competitive in hockey games, I mean, he was one of the guys who's playing pretty well and was having a decent season when injuries kind of took that away. And this whole wrist, what's going on with his wrist right now, that's also worth wondering about, because, you know, for him to sit out all that time, to come back, play two games, and then need surgery, kind of makes you wonder, like, why didn't he get surgery right away? You know, and it's these things kind of pop up with the Canadians a bit. I mean, you look at what's going on with Shea Weber. Shea Weber is in the situation he's in because that foot injury off that Jack Eichel shot in Buffalo all those years ago wasn't properly diagnosed, let's be honest. And surgery, he played on it for weeks when he probably shouldn't have. He needed surgery, and they didn't catch that. So Jonathan Drouin is in a bit of a similar situation to that right now with his wrist. So, yeah, I mean, I think both the Canadians and Joe would love for something to happen this offseason. And I think Emmanuel's on the chat. Eric, I'm going to get to you in 1 sec. I'm just going to see. Emmanuel's got a little. If I may add on to that, do we keep Drouin and package it at the deadline for bigger return, hoping that St. Louis can get the best out of Drouin? Yeah, maybe. I mean, you could. Yeah. I mean, if they don't manage to find a way to do it at the draft, that's always a possibility. It is a risk, because if Joe has a terrible season next year, which we don't really know, I mean, he could. That's the risk, that if he doesn't perform, then there's a depreciated asset there. But I do think his value is reasonably, I don't want to say it's high, because it's probably not at its highest right now, but it's not all that low if anyone watched him play this year. It's just that this injury is the only thing diminishing that. Okay, let's go to Eric, who's waiting.
Hey, Arpin.
Hey, Eric, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good.
I have two questions. First one is around the goaltending situation, and given the recent events with Carey Price, if you're Kent Hughes, how do you handle this going forward? Are you looking for a number one goaltender going forward, or do you wait on the health of Carey Price? And my second question has to do with Martin St. Louis, given the probably the only one asking this question recently, is given his recent 9-game losing streak, do you have your feelings on Martin St. Louis changed, and do you sign him to coach next year?
Okay, I will tackle those. Thank you, Eric. So first question, the goaltending situation. Again, as I mentioned earlier, I mean, I said it in French, but it the entire offseason hinges on Carey Price having some sort of clarity on his health. And this is why this doctor's visit, which is being kind of characterized as routine and nothing alarming, is somewhat alarming. Like, frankly, it's just like you know, he's only played in 4 games. And it is convenient that the Canadians are in town. His doctor's in New York. All that makes sense. But it is something that's going to impact everything else the Canadians do this offseason. There's no other way to put it. I did say, I think I said it in French earlier, but this is the real huge question mark that continues with this club. And all the offseason planning hinges on it. So really, it's hard to make any decisions on anything, let alone the goaltending, but it impacts so many other things, all sorts of other positions, that I don't envy, like, Ken Hughes and Jeff Gordon have to tiptoe around this thing. Like, the best solution would be for them to find a team and for Carey to find a team where he wants to go, who's willing to take him. Canadians eat some money and he goes and he just gets a fresh start there. And then, and they take that, but they would have to take that massive risk on Carey Price's knee. And frankly, I have a hard time seeing teams willing to do that in the off season. I think teams would want to be like, okay, well, let's see what he does over the first half of next season. And then maybe at the trade deadline, maybe we can talk. If he shows that he gets back to where he's at, then we could talk. So I don't think they're going to do anything with the goaltending situation. Listen, if Carey Price can't go, I think they're fine having Jake Allen start. There's no huge ambitions for next season in Montreal. They don't want to be the worst team in the league next year, but they're pretty realistic that they're probably not going to make the playoffs. So you don't really need an elite number one goalie right away. Jake Allen is more than capable of handling that job. That's how I think they're going to – because they can't make any decisions on goaltending. What I would consider doing, and it's unfortunate this year because it looks like a pretty soft year for goalies in the draft, but I would start drafting some goalies. Like, I mean, they have a couple in the system, but they're not particularly deep organizationally at that position. This is a process that should have began a while ago, which I guess you could argue it did begin when they drafted Zach Vercalli. But it's, you know, Caden Primeau, no one can say with any degree of assurance whether he's ever going to be an NHL goalie. The Canadians need to get deeper at that position through the draft. Second question, has this 9-game losing streak changed my view of Martin Saint-Louis? I mean, I'm going to say no, only because this 9-game losing streak is a reflection of the team that he's coaching. Let's be honest. They lose Lehkonen, they lose Kulak, they lose Sherratt, they lose a whole bunch of, like, they lost, you know, Toffoli before that. No, they've lost some legit NHL players, and they're being replaced right now by, you know, Cale Klag was in the line, William Lagesson was in the lineup the other night, Jordan Harris, you know, who's showing lots of promise, but still very green and probably shouldn't be playing NHL games right now, is in the lineup. Michael Pezzetto, who's a great story earlier in the season, is in the lineup. Would he be on a competitive NHL team? Probably not. The list goes on and on. There's a bunch of guys who are just we're just playing because they can fill a uniform and they can play. But, you know, are they the ideal people for those? So I think Martin Saint-Louis deserves some benefit of the doubt based on two things, how individual players are improving under him. One guy, like, forget Cole Caulfield. I'm not even talking about Cole Caulfield. And forget Jeff Petrie even. I'm not talking about Jeff Petrie. Look at how Jake Evans is playing right now. And that to me is a big one, because he is making confident plays with the puck offensively. This is a guy, and actually we talked to him about this morning at MSG. You can go on the Canadian site and listen to his answer. But when Jake Evans was in Laval, Joel Bouchard actually explained to him, listen, if you're going to make the NHL, it's going to be as this. Basically, fourth line, checking role, penalty killer. Like, do these things well, win your draws, and you can make the NHL. And Jake Evans bought into that 100%. And, like, I've never heard a player say before reaching the NHL that I know when I make it to the NHL, I'm going to be a fourth line center. Jake Evans said that, and he meant it. And so today I asked him, you know, do you still feel that way? Like, is that still your, and he admitted, no, now I can see, like, that was just me wanting to make the NHL. Now I've kind of made it. So he wants to push his game to new heights. And no, Martin Saint-Louis didn't want to take credit for that because I asked him if he had something to do with that, but there's no doubt, you know, the one thing Martin Saint-Louis does really well is he deals with the players individually. I don't know how many NHL head coaches do that. They usually have their assistant coaches do that, but he does it. He will grab a guy and say, hey, come with me into the video room. I've noticed a few things. Here's this, this, and that. You know, Jeff Petrie brought it up, how he's done that with him. So veterans, young players, it doesn't matter. Jordan Harris, before his first game where he was a healthy scratch, before that game, Martin St. Louis sat down with him, showed him some clips and said, this is what I want you to watch for tonight in the press box from up top. I want you to see, I want you to watch out for these things. I believe it was in New Jersey. So look for these things. And Jordan and Harris did that. And then the next game that he played, he felt that those areas improved. And so, you know, if the Canadians are going to go young and they're going to go draft and develop, and they have all these kids coming from the last few years of drafting many players, having a lot of draft picks, to me, having a coach like Martin St. Louis, who does these things, who understands player development on a level that I don't think many NHL coaches understand it, just because of his unique package of being a Hall of Fame player and being a really passionate coach, an effective coach. I think that's a good thing to have, especially, you know, with all these young players coming up, and to have someone who can do that. And he said something really interesting today, because he said the one thing that he's working on as a coach is that, and he's mentioned it in the past, he mentioned that in a classroom of kids, you'll have a kid who's in the 90s and another kid who's in the 60s. Well, you can't teach those two kids the same way, but they're in the same class. So you got to figure out a way to get your message to those two kids in a way that those two kids will understand it. And that's kind of what he reiterated today at Madison Square Garden, that not every player digests information the same way. And he needs to learn how specific players digest certain bits of information that he's giving them, and what's the best way for him to deliver those messages. That's something he's still learning. But to have a coach, an NHL coach, who works individually with players is pretty unique. It's not something you see every day. And he does it a lot, constantly. And so I think, you know, continued development of Caulfield, continued development of Suzuki. Might have a Caden Gooley coming to the team next year. Who knows? Jordan Harris, if he breaks camp with the Canadians, will be there. I mean, there are young players coming that are going to need that kind of attention. And I think they probably have the perfect guy for it. Now, can I be wrong on that? Sure. But he hasn't had a training camp yet. He's still learning how to be an NHL coach. But all that considered, I think he's got a pretty decent grasp on how to teach hockey. And I think that's something the Canadians probably need right now. But if he has another 9-game losing streak next season, I don't think he's going to get that benefit of the doubt. So it's a fair point. It's a fair question. Not a lot of people are asking it. You're right. But, you know, it is something. I think he's just going to get that shot. And then eventually, when the team is supposed to be better on the ice, when the roster is supposed to be more competitive, if it's not, that's when he's going to start getting the criticism. Right now, I have trouble criticizing him in any meaningful way. When you look at the lineup every night, it just doesn't seem fair. I'm gonna cut it off there, guys, just because there's a game tonight. Alors je vais terminer là. Mais merci beaucoup tout le monde for being here. Thank you very much, everyone, for coming by. It was great. I really love these, and I'm gonna do some more. I'll do an off-season one probably in a couple of weeks. Alors, je vais faire un dans une couple de semaines pendant les séries pour parler des enjeux de la saison morte pour les Canadiens. But until then, thanks for coming, and we'll see you next time. On se verra la prochaine fois. Merci beaucoup.